That's Frank Strozier on alto sax with Cloudy and Cool. It's from his 1960 album, Cool, Calm, and Collected. It's also featuring Billy Wallace on piano, Bill Lee on bass, and Vernell Fournier on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Mutrice Lead. And that's what I think we ought to be doing. Being calm and cool and collected, given the state of affairs in America right now. I wanted to see if we could catch up on our homework assignment. What am I talking about, they say? Well, it's a week since the Republicans captured not only the White House, the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate, but also 32 state legislatures and 33 governorships as well. By any definition, that's a political drubbing. And most believe it also is a dramatic political turning point for the country. Fighting, as the saying goes, is on the wall. As the duopoly's Trump-Clinton battle entered hyper mode nearing election day, Lead Stories encouraged listeners to examine the quandary that many voters found themselves in. They intensely disliked and distrusted both candidates, yet felt bound, whether by civic duty or force of habit, to cast their lot with one of them. Believing elections to be essentially a two-party affair, they also felt that voting for a third party was akin to wasting their vote. Well, the election is over, despite the fact that protests are ongoing across the country seeking to reverse the outcome. I don't think they will succeed. And with Trump beginning to shape his administration, it's all about moving ahead with a new agenda. Unless, of course, you have begun your reckoning with the system and have an agenda of your own. You know, since using that word some months ago and talking about the need for us to come to a reckoning, this should be our year, I said, of reckoning. It's been popping up all over the place. It shows that people are kind of in tune with a need for something else. And that means evaluating what we have been dealing with all this time, yet we know intuitively that something else is needed. We can't go along with the system. It just doesn't know what it's doing. It is totally corrupt. And it has been running a game, a very, very sad game on the country. People really believing that voting somehow is going to make things better. It would be interpreted by the powers that be as an earnest vote, a vote, you know, that is as pure as you could get on the part of the voters. They're really voting with their hearts, really wanting change, really expecting something different, something better. And so they cast their lot, even when they have to hold their noses, as we just saw in this last election. It was so clear to them that neither candidate really passes muster. But they felt they had no other choice. The reason I talk about coming to a point of reckoning is that we should really dispossess ourselves of that notion that even when things are just so undesirable, we need to go along with the program because, well, it's what we've got, and it is the system. It's the American system, the American political system. There will be a winner, and then comes the second part. After having held our noses and voted, the second part is to now get out as many prayer beads as you have on hand and start praying that you just did the right thing, or praying that the person voted in will do the right thing. But it's a crapshoot. I'm saying that the time has come for us to really change our habits. We keep doing the same thing, and then we get angry that we keep getting the same thing. What is it that we're supposed to do? For one thing, we ought to take ourselves very seriously. We ought to have some kind of standards for ourselves. And we ought not be afraid that we should insist our standards prevail over whatever it is that they're offering. We should be brave enough. Don't get all upset if your agenda doesn't win out. That's okay. Don't start freaking out because the wrong people won. The wrong people have been winning since this wretched system has been devised. They've been the wrong people. And we can't forget, of course, that when these parties were formed, it was actually the Uniparty. It was just one party called the Republican Democratic Party. And then later on, they had a split. They couldn't get along with each other. They had philosophical differences. And I don't know why that should have mattered to us, because no matter who was winning, we were losing. So I look at the situation as really a kind of order to myself. And the command to myself is to not lose my head, to remain as sane as possible, because this is an insane situation. I should not feed into their insanity, because in the end, the insanity is directed and will be directed at me and people like me. We're the ones who, no matter who wins, we will lose. It's a guarantee. And Donald Trump is having a pretty exciting time right now, and he's shaping up his government, despite the fact that he has never governed. And Hillary Clinton has forces in the street threatening to overthrow the United States unless she is returned to her rightful place as leader of the free world. And you say, well, if you really look at the two, what are you comparing here? And is it going to really improve your life? Whichever of the crazy choices that you make, if you were going to stick with your choice of the duopoly, candidate A, candidate B, the sociopath or the psychopath. And people are supposed to accept this as, well, acceptable. No. We should interpret this period very differently. It is the latest of warnings that we are getting as a nation that we better, we the people, better get busy constructing something that affords us some kind of credible defense against this kind of madness. Going back in time, you see how, although the parties may disagree with each other on, you know, philosophy or on matters of policy or whatever, they always agree that they are entitled to rule not just Americans, but the entire world. They always agree on that. The elections, therefore, are just a way of giving license, official license, to whomever does better at getting the most votes. And even that, including this recent election, even that is rigged. The system isn't called the system for nothing. It leaves nothing to chance. If people thought that, well, gee, I wonder who's going to win, that's been decided. It's been decided. And frankly, it's just a technicality if you look at it from the vantage point of what's going to happen to you and me. It doesn't really matter who gets into the White House. It hasn't mattered much. Well, I'll give you an interesting little vignette here. African Americans played a major, major role in the formation of the Republican Party. Some people said, well, it was a direct consequence of identifying with the party because Lincoln freed the slaves. That is not true. They actually formed the Republican Party. The idea that blacks formed the Republican Party because Lincoln freed the slaves is a convenient narrative because it keeps going this legend of the white liberator freeing black slaves. Not at all true. The slaves, once freed, formed their own party, and they called it the Republican Party. It was whites who joined them to flesh out this Republican Party. But the slaves, ex-slaves, went ahead and joined together and formed the Republican Party. The Democratic Party was deeply entrenched in the slavocracy South. It was the party of the Klan. It was the party of the slaveholders. It was the party of domestic terrorism. And so, because people don't have their information right, you marvel at the fact that in 2016, African Americans in particular decide overwhelmingly that the Democratic Party candidate is where they ought to go. And they went there. And they voted for a person who emulates, when you think about it, the letter and spirit of the slavocracy South, the Democratic Party of yesteryear. Now, I would argue that the formation of the Republican Party, by African Americans, they started it, not only was a bold move, but it took a lot of bravery and it took a lot of foresight, but it also took a very clear understanding and a very long vision about what politics, organized politics, could do if people got their brains right. Here was a move, a political move, that if in effect had enormous impact in terms of liberating African Americans particularly, but not exclusively. Although they formed the party took on other cargo, similarly situated, and then grew from there. Oddly, as all things tend to go, when we talk about race in America, it did reach a point where the leadership of the party was overtaken by whites, and it became a very white party. But for a long time, the Republican Party, constructed by African Americans, remained true to its vision because people had reached a point of reckoning. And decided that they could be captains of their own ship. You would not find this narrative in most history books, U.S. history books, because they are loath to concede anything good ever came from African Americans, and certainly with the Republican Party, as is conceived now in the national psyche, it couldn't even have been possible that this is how the Republican Party was born. Nor would it have been possible for them to wrap their brains around the fact that the Democratic Party was the party of the Klan. The Democratic Party was the party of domestic terrorism. We have documented instances where the Republican Party members in Opelousas, in Florida, literally went to defend the right to vote, the blacks' right to vote, with guns. You know, we had a very interesting transformation. And all of this comes from a very careful examination of what a system can do when it is operating in sync with a vision that is clear, that is courageous, that is justice-minded, that sees itself having a role in the transformation, a genuine transformation of society. We no longer have that. That went the way of the dodo bird. But that doesn't mean we throw away something that is worth keeping. And what is worth keeping is having our minds very, very clear about what this political process should mean to us and for us, and having the resolve and the courage to decide definitively that when it no longer serves such a purpose, you owe it to yourselves, you owe it to history, to just leave it alone and fashion something that would probably work. No guarantees, but chances are if you put enough energy into a process and a project, you will see some kind of positive results. That's what I mean by reckoning. We have given too much time, effort, and energy, and money, and faith to a system not worth it at all. And in depleting ourselves of these resources, we therefore have very few resources to give to actually putting something together that would work. Not to mention the fact that we would have been so discouraged. We would have been so beaten up. We would have been so despondent and despairing that we wouldn't even want to try. But we have to try something, even at risk of failure, but consoled at least that we're doing something for our own good. The political process, I don't think too many people would disagree, has become predatory and antithetical to progress. It is actually feeding on the assets and resources, human and material, of people who deserve much better. It is counterproductive. It is undemocratic. And we have to disabuse ourselves of the notion that this, what we are experiencing, what we have been experiencing for decades now, is what it's supposed to be, what democracy is supposed to be, and what gives us the right to rock on our heels and grab our lapels and grab our pearl necklaces and yammer on about how great this country is that we have the system in place. So we are at this point, the turning point, and it will be a significant one. We have one individual, Hillary Rodham Clinton, who is a seasoned criminal. And compounding that attitude with the attitude that she's entitled to it. So that people are just mere cogs in her pre-designed wheel. Not people with hopes and dreams and aspirations. That's what she was communicating when she went to that Mother AME Zion Church in North Carolina. In South Carolina, sorry, and said directly to the members of the congregation that her grandchildren will never suffer the way their grandchildren will, because her grandchildren are the grandchildren of a president and a secretary of state, and she was careful to mention, and she said, they are white. Now that is not just offensive, but it is incredibly accurate and illuminating about how people, how this person, Hillary Clinton, sees the world. She's not there to share the good news about some ideas that she has to improve the lot of the people she's talking to. She's there to remind them of their place in the political scheme of things, the socio-political scheme of things, and her superiority, her long-held benefit of being in a position to be superior. She's extolling, in other words, the virtues and the benefits of white supremacy. And they applauded wildly. They loved her for being there, using them just as, you know, props. On the other hand, we have Donald Trump, whose ego is a mile wide and half an inch deep. He's a shallow man and has some really interesting beliefs and attitudes of his own. And even though his grandfather and his father could not have made it in America as white people, they were not white enough. They were of Germanic stock. And in America, that's not white. That wasn't white. You had to be Anglo-Saxon Protestant to be white. You can't just show up from Germany and establish yourself as a member of the white dominant race in the United States. Not at all. So it began with his forebears deracinating themselves, becoming un-German, because they wanted to be part of the power elite, but they weren't white enough. In fact, they weren't white at all. Not by law, not by categorization. In apartheid America, you were not white if you were German. So Friedrich Trumpf became Frederick Trump. He learned the lesson early about what was required to establish yourself as a white person in America. You deracinate yourself. It's required. And so they did exactly that. So Trump's wealth today is a direct result of the trade-off. Only because there was a change of identification, racial or cultural identification, was there an opportunity to participate meaningfully in the American economic system. So, it's a matter of people understanding systems and how systems can get you through a very narrow passage to another side where things would open up. The importance of systems to your life. You've got to understand systems. And we all are products of systems. I think that's the greatest secret of America. That people are encouraged to think of it as being one thing, success hinging, say, on your study well. Therefore, you'll get a good job. Therefore, you live in a nice house, in a nice part of town. The American dream, as it is called, is the diversion. The real thing that you've got to get hooked into is understanding systems, what they're about, how they work. So that people don't wake up on November 9th wondering, how could this have been? How did this happen? Well, it's because there are systems. And one system worked better than the other. But neither system will work for you. See? I get it. That's why it doesn't trouble me. And I told you about my epiphany in a voting booth. I had the feeling of a person being mugged, being asked to green light a project that was described several hundreds of millions of dollars, described in three sentences, vote yes, no. Vote and get out. We'll take it from there. And I said, no. You know what? I'm not voting at all. Until I discern that there's a compelling reason for me to vote. Because voting is part of your system. And I may just not want to be part of your system. Because it will not be working for me. It won't be working for people like me. So you and your system could just go your way. And I'll go mine. And try to devise a system that, to the extent possible, I could control. And that reflects what it is I want to do. And that's what people have to start doing. Remove yourselves from the system that exists. It will do you no good. It does no good, or it does very little good. Because it wasn't designed for all of us. This whole thing wasn't designed for you and me. It was designed for the power elite, and it was designed to remain that way forever and ever and ever. You're not going to go in there and change the vision of the Democratic Party or the vision of the Republican Party. You really think you could do that? You really think that we have that power? And even if we have that power, do you think we ought to remain in that position of constantly paying the price for, quote, progress, unquote? They use us. They use our political support. They use our votes to advance their cause, to maintain the status quo, to make the party and its so-called ideals impervious to change. And they've done it over hundreds of years. This is why I laugh sometimes. From time to time, you get a story about a priest who has the idea that the church, the Catholic Church, is not advanced enough. It's not doing enough to encourage democracy within the ranks, and they want to change. And I crack up. I immediately ask, you clearly haven't studied the system, have you? Have you? You proposing, you think the church will be amenable to your ideas of changing it when it has spent thousands of years and waged even wars to remain exactly the same? You really think the wonderful pope you see there, the guy who is so liberal, this pope is a liberal pope. Yeah, until you sit down and start talking about change within the church, he stops being liberal instantly. Because he sees that what you're trying to do is to change the system that has been carefully refined to resist change for all these years and for all time. You come up with your brilliant ideas. They flick you off like a flea. So this point of reckoning, we're going to be talking. I open up the phone lines at 888-874-4888. How far have you gotten with your homework assignment, which is to really consider systems, the role of systems in shaping our lives, and the necessity for designing something else? And don't be afraid if it doesn't work. But you've got to make a move. You've got to come to terms with what is acceptable, what you won't accept. What you think works for you, what you definitely know will not work for you. How we can progress, whether we progress individually or collectively, you ought to be clear about that. Because not everybody talking about, well, we've got to come together and we have to put our resources together and we will progress. Don't bet on that. We have ready examples of betrayal of by people who read us right. We are yearning. We are weak. We're looking for direction, and all they have to do is to say the right things, and we're there, ready to be plundered. What is confronting us, and I don't mean to sound like I'm kind of inculcating a sense of fear. I don't believe in that. I believe we're up to whatever. But we have to have clarity. That's the one thing I say we ought to do. Arrive at a point of clarity about things. Have you been doing your homework? Have you gotten anywhere yet with respect to this assignment? Right after this break, we'll hear what your reports are. Right after this break. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're doing a review of your homework assignment, our homework assignment, because I'm in it too, evaluating where we are, and this is what we were talking about, and we're calling it a point of reckoning, getting some clarity about this whole political process. How far do we think we are on this course? From Lawrence, New York, Chris, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Eutrice?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hello to all the PRN listeners and staff.
Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. I was unaware of the homework assignment, but hopefully I can add something to the conversation. As far as systems are concerned, I'm imagining, like, personally, I don't necessarily agree with protesting, like walking in the street and getting harassed and arrested by police officers. But I do believe in collective effort, and I do believe in gathering people, but for a purpose. And I think that when a group of people get together to protest, perhaps they should be discussing a way to replace, if it's college kids, they should be discussing a way to replace the banks with each other. And maybe they can collectively borrow from each other, excuse me, and collectively pay off each other's debts so that maybe they don't have to worry so much about fighting for their own rights, in which case they may be arrested and miss work that Monday. But the first system I would definitely try to advise people to get into with their close, excuse me. Hello?
Hello, Chris. Are we having some interference here?
Sorry, I am choking on air. I don't know what's going on. But I would say that we definitely need systems that replace our current employers and replace our current banking system.
What we're looking for is really each person taking on an assignment, if you will, be calling it that, of evaluating the political process as it relates to him or her, and trying to figure out what of this process is meaningful, what is not meaningful, how far are you going to go with it, knowing that it has severe limitations, and what are you willing to do, or what do you see yourself doing as devising a workable alternative?
Well, a workable alternative would definitely be something that looks more like a direct democracy. And I think that conversation right there is not being had. And I think if we could present and educate people, you know, what that would feel like, what that could look like, and what that would mean after an election and even during a primary, I don't think people even know what that might look like or how fluid that would be for them. And I think when we start, and I've seen this in the last couple of days since the election, voices in the progressive area, we're not going to specify who because that would take a little bit of time, but actually doing what Hillary Clinton did to Trump voters, insulting them. Oh, black people, you didn't get out enough. Oh, you millennials, you don't understand that you have to vote with a tactic or with a plan. And when they start justifying it, it's being done right now. I'm not saying you. I'm not saying this station. But it's being done by certain commentators, certain, you know, alleged progressive voices are actually trying and themselves rationalizing that the current system works. So I think education on a direct democracy would work. And I think also, I know I'm hammering this, but I also think that, number one, we should be looking to our friends and family and having actual conversations about how we can directly affect each other's lives. And I would definitely say financially and through education. But I think finance is a big problem in our world and our political power. And I think that we should collectively be freeing ourselves from our slaveholders through borrowing and lending to each other.
You gave us some things to think about. Thanks for calling in. From South Carolina, Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. How are you today?
Fine. I'm hanging in. How are you?
I'm good. I think we spoke a few weeks ago before the election. And I totally understand your stance. But I was just not prepared to physically vote for someone that I knew who would put in place these Klans people in the White House. And if that is not a clear message, nothing is in terms of it's actually making your argument in a way. I would say this, and when we spoke, you know, I gave you some what I thought were solutions. You know, 3 years, we have to build coalitions because this is a bicameral system that we work in. And the problem that I see is that you know, you can't give up voting on a local level because that definitely affects your life. Okay. I mean, folks make laws, and when you get arrested or whatever happens, you know, you have to, no matter what your beliefs are, you're going to jail. So we have to continue to participate in the system on a local level. And I think what happens, people get disillusioned. I've been talking to a lot of people. A lot of people have dropped out of the system. Now, I don't think that's a good idea. I can understand dropping out of the federal elections, you know, when it comes to president. But actually, what really controls Washington is the legislators, the people who make the laws, the Congress and the House. I mean, the Senate and the House. See, but we can co-opt that. It's going to take a little bit of time, but we can do that. And in the local election. Go ahead.
For yourself, I just want to ask, for yourself, your individual self, do you feel that you have a handle on where you locate yourself on the political spectrum?
I feel like I'm getting there.
Okay, that's good.
Because
that's good.
I had a hand in electing the mayor in this little town I live in. And guess what? This is a black woman, and this is the first time in this town we've had a female black mayor ever. And it's only second time maybe a female. And she only won by 23 votes. 23 votes. So, but of course, there's a power structure, you know, like C. Wright Mills, the power elite, they still, you know, on a microcosm, they still run things. But, you know, we can't give up. You know, we have to keep working because if we go to sleep, nothing will happen.
But you're feeling good about for yourself, you're feeling like you're coming into your own politically, and you have a handle at least on how your individual political, your orientation fits with what your orientation now fits with what you perceived to be your role now. You think that there's synchronicity here.
Well, absolutely, but you have to be proactive. Just like, let's see, back in the spring, I'm one of a handful of people where we have started the Citizens Police Advisory Council, and our demands have been met that the police here have to go through us. If something happens, in terms of officer misconduct, you know, they have to go through our committee before any type of action is taken. Power can seize nothing without demands. I mean, that is a simple statement. We all know who made it, but it is true.
That's Frederick Douglass, by the way.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It is.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're getting there, or you feel that you're getting there, and that's great. And that's all we're saying. Develop a consciousness and see to what degree your consciousness is fitting with your current actions. And is there a yawning gap, the width of the Grand Canyon here, or are you bridging it? Then you're doing the work, and that's great. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Therese.
Let's go to Jay from Queens. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Therese. How are you?
Hello. Fine, thank you, Jay. How are you?
I'm well. In the interest of time, I just wanted to recite something briefly. It's nothing I got to read, but basically when you speak of the reason not to vote, I thought so many times when you mentioned that, the idea of what Martin Luther King said during the I Have a Dream speech, which was briefly the Negro in New York believes he has nothing which to vote for. We cannot be satisfied. And until also the Negro in Mississippi can vote. But that's paraphrasing it. In short, what I'm alluding to, when I went to the polls to vote this past general election, I noticed that the ballot, there were certain things, like I didn't vote for the judges. I actually wrote my name in as the judge. as the judges in all. There were seven selections. And the reason why I did so was because, like you say, if you're voting for a major infrastructure project and you know nothing about it, the parties, both Republican and Democrat, select the judges. They're pre-selected. You know, you don't have a judging, you know, campaign or runoff for judges. So if you just pick them because their name is there. I said, I refuse to do that. Because I don't know where they stand, what their stance is on any of these issues. So rather than I'll have more confidence in myself, and I wrote my name in. That being said, also the way the ballot was structured, the thick line, which of demarcation between the Green Party and the Libertarian Party was not there. There was for the Democrat and there was for Republican, but it was easy to just inadvertently choose one of the Green or their independent party because they didn't have a line. That was clearly just format itself, which could lead to confusion. And adding to that, one of the poll watchers, or the person who was not poll watching but handing out the ballot, said, oh, you have to vote down the line. So if you voted Democrat or Green for the president, you had to vote down the line as Green. I didn't think that was true, and I'm still going to look into it. So that's my personal homework.
Actually, if she did that, that was called illegal.
Yeah, I thought so. Actually, it was voter steering. In other words, if you were going to vote for Clinton, which everybody was excited and presumed because New York's a predominantly Democratic town, then you would go down the list and vote all Democrats. Well, what if you didn't agree? So the instructions were bad and I think incorrect, and that just shows the level of incompetency and the level of clear instructions you get even at the polls, that the party systems are sometimes controlled. And I don't care whether Republican or Democrat. That's problematic, that you're not getting – one is not getting clear instruction. Okay, so that's really problematic because that's exactly what my assessment was too. But I went ahead and then voted the way, which was Green, as I said I would. That being said, I want to conclude with this other thought, and that is we can't surrender. We can't give up. We got to keep fighting. And all of these manifestations, even the protests, I hope they will be peaceful because there's no reason to throw a brick through a window. It's not going to get you anything. You know, I'm not suggesting the property isn't appropriate to target, but I am saying that we don't need to be violent, but we need to be visibly demonstrating our disdain for what has occurred in the system. Not that I wanted Clinton. I don't think many people wanted Clinton to win. But this person in the White House, as you just summed up earlier, is a complete clueless imbecile, but he's surrounded with the most detrimental type of personnel, as a syncopath and pathological people that I won't call it the White House for now. I'll call it the Madhouse because that's about what we got. And it's very dangerous.
You know,
and I think
just a continuum. We've had this before. This is my point. Don't get all alarmed about it. We've had on a recurring basis. And all I'm trying to say is, when are we going to say, all right, I've got the message and I'm not part of that system anymore. I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to go someplace else. So that's what we have to...
When we construct a new one, I think that's the challenge that we all have, that we have to look within and look without and look within the concentric circle as we reach out to find a way to construct a new model. This model is built on a system that is flawed. It's built on a capitalist financial system, a distribution of wealth and resources that has direct consequences to our political structure and how we go about our lives. And until we're willing to challenge ourselves and what we consider ourselves citizens or consumers and reconstruct a new model, it is going to take personal sacrifice. There's no getting around this. Otherwise, we live with these what are considered externalities but are not. They are a part of the system. So we are part of the problem as much as we are a part of the solution.
Thank you, Jay, for your call and for offering your thoughts today. And that brings us to the end of the program, just like that. We have to continue talking about this because it is a way of waking up ourselves. We don't have to have anybody do it. We have to do this ourselves. Just taking hints from others, but really concentrating on arriving at several points of awareness of ourselves as political agents. And therefore, what are we contributing? What are we prepared to contribute to the aggregate progress and to the aggregate benefit of people? do we even have anything to offer? This is the stuff we have to work on. And it is okay if, you know, you feel a little intimidated about the process, but nobody has ever encouraged us to just seek the knowledge and educate ourselves. So this is what we have to do. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.